top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
Strange case. No sign of violence, yet she looks completely contorted in fear. Almost as if she'd been frightened to death. As if she'd seen something too horrible to live through.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
Something horrible is invading New York. Something terrifying. Something you've never seen before. It's the killer condom, the rubber that rubs you out. Danger is everywhere. The army of condoms have overrun the city. Only one man is brave enough to take on the crazed condoms. Luigi Macaroni, police detective. He alone must do battle with the army of death, preying upon the citizens of New York City. Played by Udo Samuel, star of the masterpieces of German cinema, Far Away So Close and Kaspar Hauser, Macaroni must save the city and himself from the destructive power of the killer condoms. The conspiracy that he uncovers is so shocking that it could cost him his life. Under the direction of Martin Waltz and boasting the lavish production of Ralph Dietrich and Harold Rachevner, Ralph Koenig's comic book becomes terrifyingly real. Brought to horrifying life by Academy Award winner H.R. Giger, whose creations thrilled you in Alien and Species. In a world where safe sex is deadly, it's the killer condom, the rubber that rubs you out. It's from Troma, of course.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 222, Killer Condom.
A.K.A. Chris, since your pronunciation is better.
I can't recall.
The condoms...
Des Glowens.
The grounds, yes.
Condom Dread.
Yes.
To be perfectly accurate.
Or the Condom of Dread. Yeah. Yeah, this is a German film from 1996. I love this movie. I'm just going to say right now.
Well, we should also say what inspired this movie. You are fresh back from a wonderful...
Whirlwind trip.
From Berlin.
Yeah, I was in
you
Berlin.
You were a Berliner.
Ich bin Berliner. Yeah. I was in Berlin. I just went for a quick jaunt, really. It was really too short because I had a week off work and I decided I needed to go somewhere. And I've been to Germany twice before, but I'd never gone to Berlin. And that was a oversight I had to correct, especially because you know so many people tell me I have to go to Berlin. So I went for 4 days, and it was a great, great trip. I wish I was still there, frankly.
No, me too.
It was phenomenal. The fact that you weren't there made it even better.
But... Well, that's what precipitated this discussion. I also have a certain fondness for Germany. I lived there for a year in high school. My mom's from there. I just know it's just so great.
I love the country. I really do. And, you know, there's just something about it. Everyone's like, oh, well, there's... the magic of Paris or the, you know, the fairy tale element of Prague. And these are all great, you know, but
yeah.
I really like Germany. I mean, I don't know. I feel like I might have been German in a past life because every time I've gone, I've enjoyed it immensely.
Yeah, pretzels the size of steering wheels in Munich. Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, just wonderful.
Interestingly enough, although this is a German movie, it takes place in the good old US of A. It takes place in a weird, bizarro version of New York City where everybody speaks Deutsch, right?
Yeah. Which is always cool to see because we're accustomed to that being the case with English that just happened. So it's a kind of a about face to see... And you get sort of a German sensibility when you plunk it in the Big Apple.
Why is it that every time you watch a period movie, a crappy period movie like, I don't know, Troy or Gladiator or whatever these...
filled with English people?
It's always... Everyone has a British accent.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, is that the lingua franca of accents? You know, when it came to really ancient bizarre. Greece and like Roman stuff?
Oh, I'd love to see a period Roman... film with Latin. That would be absolutely fantastic. Yeah. Well, good luck learning the dialogue for that.
Well, hey, if Mr. Gibson can make a film in Aramaic, right?
For sure. That's ballsy, for sure.
I haven't seen The Passion of the Christ.
Nor have I.
I don't really tend to support anything Mel Gibson does anymore.
No.
Anything post, let's say, Lethal Open 2.
Yeah, exactly.
That was good Mel Gibson. Now it's now we're crazy old man Mel Gibson.
Yeah, exactly.
So. But yeah, this movie, I love. The first time I saw it, believe it or not, was on network TV. Showcase, I guess, but still, network TV. This was back when TV was still cool and adventurous, at 12 o'clock in the afternoon.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was a Saturday, and I saw, because, that was back still when TV Guides, we had to rely on TV Guides to see what's coming up. And I was flipping through the TV Guides, I used to highlight the movies I want to watch, right? Oh my God, Killer Condom is coming on at, at 12 o'clock? I'm fucking watching this thing, because I wanted to see it for a couple of reasons. I wanted to see it because it's a movie called Killer Condom. Hmm. How can you not want to see it? B, it's not a Troma film, but it was distributed by Troma. So there was a Troma element to it as well. And I was, I still love Troma, but at the time I was tracking out every Troma film I could possibly find. Anything that was distributed by them. Now I don't watch each and every Troma movie, but still there was that. The fact that Giger had a... Or was it Geiger? People always correct me on my pronunciation.
Jeez, H.R. Giger, to say.
The fact that he designed the titular condom. I worship Giger. I love his... Even though I can't pronounce his name, whatever, but I love... No, I just love his art. Speaking of travels, the last one was in Vienna. I made a pilgrimage to a very unique museum in Vienna called the Hundertwasser Haus. And it's a local Viennese artist, and that was his name that he adopted, Hundertwasser. It actually means 100.
100 water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the very whimsical painter, and the museum is very whimsical. Everything about it, it's almost like being in a house in a Dr. Seuss book. The corners were just sort of rising up to the ceiling or something, right? And so the Hundertwasser stuff occupied the first floor, and at the second floor, they have rotating exhibits. And this time around, this is my second time visiting the Hundertwasser House, they had a Giger exhibit. And I was just,
how come I didn't know about this?
Well, this was 10 years ago. This is when I was there on my honeymoon.
Oh, my. Yeah. I was at Mozart's house and Freud's house, was super cool. I mean, looking at the original Mozart scores and everything, but that sounds really incredible. My God.
Even Jörg Buttergeit has a bit of a hand in this movie. He was a special effects supervisor, what have you.
Neat.
That being, of course, the director of Necromantic 1 and 2 and one of my favorite films of his, Shram. So, yeah, I there I was, I don't know, it was probably about 20-odd years ago, watching this on network TV, completely uncut, and just, loving every second of it.
My 12-year-old brain is intact here.
Because when we talk about the plot of this movie, this movie is just a good movie, and there's so much about this movie that I love. So let's talk a bit about the plot before I get into the different things I like about this film.
Oh, well, this is just, again, another wonderful depiction of, I guess, at the time, New York City was still in its gritty phase, so this has a very, very... a basket case kind of aesthetic.
Definitely.
So you got this seedy motel, the flop house, where various demi-monde denizens of the evening hang out and fornicate and do all this stuff, and the front desk guy is a sleaze bag, and wonderful. 42nd Street, or as they call it, 42. Straße. It's this is so weird, watching a German movie set in New York. Anyway, you got this college professor and a woman who's his student, and in order to, for her to pass the course, this guy is blackmailing
extorting her
to fuck him.
Well, so, this is a very, this is a hotel with all the amenities included, so at the bedside of every, shitty-ass room, it's amazing how everybody in every room in this hotel is engaged in some sort of act of fornication. There's condoms. They provide rubbers. And when the professor puts on the rubber... Well, this is the rubber that rubs you out, as it says on the film.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it says on the poster. So, chomp. It bit off his penis. And this is something that's been happening a lot in this hotel.
Yeah,
this is a reoccurring thing. After one night, according to our hero, our Detective Luigi Macaroni. Yep. Gotta love that name.
Fantastic.
He says, 13 pricks are on this on the conscience of these condoms. 13 pricks and one ball, you know? Or four penises bit the dust. I mean, there's so many funny lines in this movie. Oh, but
fantastic.
Yeah, Luigi Macaroni is on the case, and he's your typical hard... He really is, like, he reminds me of a German Bob Hoskins.
Holy shit. I look at that.
You wrote that down? A
combination of Ringo Starr, Travis Bickle, and Bob Hoskins.
Okay, first of all, Travis Bickle in his monologues and his internal, you know, thoughts about New York City. But where do you get Ringo Starr from?
Oh, a little bit of his visage, but mostly Bob Hoskins. I would say 60% Bob. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's hilarious. Like, you know, great minds, I guess.
But he's, you know, he's this tough, hard-bitten New York City detective, chain-smoking, trench coat wearing, sunglass, shades wearing, whatever. But what I found really unique about this movie, especially based upon when it came out, is that he also happens to be gay. I say it that way because it's not a big deal. You know what I mean?
Funny you should say that, yeah. When I was in school as a young, naive 16-year-old, mm-hmm. we had this buddy, and he was a little bit older than us, and he had an apartment. And we used to go hang out there, and we would drink beer and smoke weed at this guy's place.
I'm about to say his name, but...
No, it's no one you know.
Oh,
just
okay.
Yeah, he was in the army, and he was kind of a sleazeball, and he just had this place, and we all used to hang out at his place. And it was kind of weird that he was a little older than us, but we thought nothing of it. It was just a place to hang out and play tunes. And one night, like, a buddy of ours, one of my classmates, got really drunk, and, like, you know, the two of them hooked up. And it's interesting, had I been on these shores, that would have made for a very different dynamic. Over there, they laughed it off, and he sort of, everyone just treated this as a joke. So there was none of this, oh, you faggot kind of thing. It was just, we all got a kick out of it. And it was, oh, these two guys got drunk, and the one guy, like, gave the other guy a blowjob or whatever. And it was, I was a little shocked by how blasé they were about it, because we were not nearly as enlightened. So I thought that was very interesting that they just figured, oh, it's just what people do. And I thought, oh, okay. Well, it was interesting to watch this in that context.
It's just that the character of Macaroni, because of, you know, the fact that he's this tough, formidable cop, even though he's short in stature, whatever.
Yeah, he's Sicilian.
It totally belied, like, the standard depiction of gay characters around the time. They're usually very effeminate, very sort of like Birdcage-esque,
sure.
Or else they would be, you know, so they'd be effeminate or flamboyant, or they'd be the, you know, the neighbor next door that always give the great advice, you know, the wacky gay next door neighbor. But to have a protagonist, tough hero cop, who just so happens to be gay, and this is a film made in 1996, and yeah, you know, at one or two points, he kind of says, hey, look, I just want love and I want to be accepted and that's it. But really, it's not a big deal. He's not in the closet. Everyone knows, you know?
Yeah, and one step beyond that, he actually frequents prostitutes, male prostitutes. So it goes even beyond him being in a, your typical relationship with another man. He goes and hangs out on 42nd Street to meet up with hustlers.
Yeah. And what also is unique about the character as well, or not just the character, but the movie, is that it really depicted, I guess you would say, the alternative lifestyle in such a non-judgmental way, in such a way that was just so sort of almost sweet. Like, you have this character of Bob, a.k.a. Babette, right? And Bob is an ex of Luigi's, and he was also an ex-police. And now he's Babette, and he has become a drag queen who is, I think, transitioning. And he's got a, you know, he's still holding the candle. But I think one of the reasons for that is because how big is Luigi's penis?
Well, I had to look this up. 32 centimeters is a whopping foot-long Schwanz, which is the same in Yiddish and in German. So this guy's, you know, he's packing quite a punch.
You got it.
Below the belt.
But what I'm trying to say is, like, you know, like, the lovelorn Babette was sweet. And it's just, you know, like, this movie just made it matter of fact, like, love is love, regardless of anything. Before, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda went up on stage, I think it was the Grammys, and went, love is love is love is love is love.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, oh my God, what a prophet. What a great guy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
this movie was pretty.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, about the whole alternative lifestyle, like, you're right. Like, you know, I guess, you know,
nor do his cop buddies give him any guff about it. It's just a thing. Yeah. Like, if anything, they may be jocular about it, but, you know, ripping him for
his
it.
His partner's, I wouldn't say homophobic, he's just uneasy, you know, with the whole gay. And Luigi has some laughs at his expense because of that.
Well, for sure.
So, yes, at first they think that it's, because it seems like all these penis chomping incidences are happening in this same hotel. And at first the cops suspect the prostitutes, you know? But really, why, as somebody so adeptly put in the movie, or deftly put it, why, that's a bread and butter. Why would they be biting off penises? Yeah, exactly. You know?
And that was a rather awkward scene where, I guess, one of the Johns gets his schlong lopped off, and they haul in the...
It's not lopped off, it's chomped off.
Chomped off, yeah. And they haul in the poor woman's parents because she becomes the prime suspect. Obviously, when you see a severed peen, you would think, okay, the last person this guy's been with would be the suspect. And when they tell the elderly couple what transpired, it's quite a scene. And this is, it's a fine line. As you think with a title like this, this would be pure exploitation. But this, the way this is handled is, I don't want to say it's whimsical or kind of...
It is.
It is kind of lighthearted in a way that's also a little bit gross. So it really meshes these two
and
competing feelings.
Mm-hmm. It's also satirical. You know, like, for example, you mentioned the parents, right? Well, she was a small-town girl from, you know, in the big city studying.
Yeah, I think from Oklahoma or something.
But they call it Farmville, Oklahoma.
Yeah,
so, you know, just like a bit of a satire of America and everything. But, yeah, it's not prostitutes buying off penises. It's condoms that are being manufactured by some nefarious... You know,
scientist,
we don't want to say. To basically punish, I guess you could say. And these condoms are a delight. I mean, these were designed by Giger, and they have these crazy, like, sarlacc-like teeth, you know, like the sarlacc in Star Wars, and they move their own volition. They have this cute little, almost like a gizmo, like from Gremlins type of sound, you know? It's just so neat. Oh. And even though everybody is assuming that it's prostitutes doing it, well, Luigi, he himself almost gets, because, you know, when he goes into one of these rooms, the condom released one of his balls. So now it's got 13 pricks on its conscience and one ball. So he knows what's going on there. He knows that it's the killer condoms, but he has to convince the skeptical police force that it's actually condoms that are doing this thing. And so it's a bit of a police procedural, too.
Well, for sure. And I just love this kind of stuff because, again, his bosses, I guess there's a hard-bitten black... superior who says, like, we can't let this get out to the news. This is utterly ridiculous. And there's some wonderful gallows humor where they take one of the bodies to the morgue and the coroner starts giving this explanation of what this creature is, which I found hilarious. Like, it's chitin, epithelial cells, this and this and that. Mm-hmm. And they're like, just, okay, doc, just give it to us straight. Like, what should we be looking for? Is this alive? What is this? Like, what is going on? And we always talk about tone in film, and this really straddles the line between comedy and horror, and does both really, really well. There's something about this subject matter that makes me squeamish, incredibly so.
Yeah.
And I guess I could share a personal story, if you will.
Afraid to hear what's going on right now.
By way of segue, this is not quite what happened, but I was watching Team Coco videos. I'm a big fan of Conan O'Brien. And the Aussie comedian Jim Jefferies tells this unbelievable story about jerking off and blood coming out. And I thought, oh my God, this is horrifying. I had a procedure. I didn't have that. I'm not going to, you know, and even if I did, I wouldn't divulge it. I had a cystoscopy, which is a procedure at a hospital where they stick a camera up that to see whether your urethra or the lining of your bladder is functioning.
I had the camera up the other end, so it's okay. Don't worry
between
about
the two of us, we got we know whether we're coming or going. Yeah. And this was that was horrifying. And afterward, like, I, you know, pissed blood, and every time I hear, like, let's say an MMA fighter or a boxer has that happen to them after with too many shots to the kidney, it's like, that will make crumple. I cannot take this.
I have a neighbor, you know, great guy. Both him and his wife are lovely people. They're both smokers, so I see them all the time when I go down for a cigarette, talk to them all the time.
the You're guy, not going to say he has a catheter, are you?
Yes. Ugh. No, but that's the thing. Like, he, you know, he had prostate cancer, right?
Oh.
So he went for surgery, and now he's recovering, and he's every time I see him, he's telling me every last detail about his catheter. How they put it in, how they take it out, how they pump it up there. I'm like, dude, please, enough of the catheter. I don't want to hear any more catheters. And just the other day, I saw a commercial on TV. Is your catheter right for you? If not, we have Catheter of the Month Club.
Where I've seen that too. Yeah. Like 4 in the morning. This was like real. Oh my god! Like,
we'll send you a sample pack of catheters.
It seems like the kind of thing that there's no good type of catheter. It's sort of like if you're a heroin addict, it's like, oh, try this needle. It's way easier. Like, yeah. Is there? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just, my god, this is stuff. But again, the humor is wonderful. It's just, and the world weariness of Luigi Macaroni is fantastic. He hates New York City. He doesn't understand what the big deal is about the Big Apple. He grew up on a farm
in Sicily.
Mm-hmm. And you could hear the rustling of the wind through the trees. And he always has these flashbacks to his mother and all this stuff. And he doesn't want to be stuck in the mean streets of Midtown Manhattan.
Well, yeah, and a lot of his monologues about Manhattan are very reminiscent of Travis Bickle in Taxi Driver.
Oh, for sure, yeah. And, yeah, I guess both of them share that clean up the streets ethos. But, again, yeah, it's the humor that really brings this through. At one point, they start to latch on to the fact that this could be the perpetrator, for lack of a better term, of this killer condom. And he gets his partner on board, presumably because Luigi is too well known in Schwule Kultur auf Deutsch, with gay culture.
Mm-hmm.
So they figure that he's not going to be a good one for the undercover mission, right. So they put his buddy in leather, and this
Sam.
Is quite fantastic,
yeah.
Sam, and
yeah.
he's all decked out in like Judas Priest circa 1987, yeah. And yeah, wonderful
and,
stuff.
And as I was saying before, Luigi has a bit of fun with him, because he says, if you take this hanky, and if you put it in your pocket... It's a red hanky. If you put it in your left pocket, perhaps, I think it was, it'll
yeah.
indicate that you don't want to be bothered. You don't want sex at night.
Yeah, exactly.
But really, it was code for, I want something. He's into water sports, so.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, Sam was not happy with the result of his undercover work, and Luigi just had a
fit
about
field
it. So, no, the movie is hilarious. I mean, the lines, even though they're in German, but the subtitles, you know, the poor girl at the beginning was being extorted by her professor and, to have sex with him in order to get the grades. She was a virgin, and that being her first sexual experience, she actually asked the cop, once the carnivorous condom eats her professor's penis off, she asks, is sex always like that? Like, that was hilarious. other great lines, of course, the four penises bit the dust that night. I love that one. When Luigi is... trying to convince his superior, goes, no, have you ever seen a carnivorous condom? I mean, just the delivery of that was great. But my favorite line was when Sam, the partner, like I said before, he wasn't really homophobic, but I think more uneasy with the culture.
Yeah.
And he was trying to tell Luigi, what you need is a woman. And Luigi says to him, so tough, but yet matter-of-factly, I can't replicate his delivery. He goes, I like firm asses, not piss flaps, And I just want to be loved and accepted for that. That's hilarious.
Oh, for sure.
Because he was just so proud of it, and he was so matter-of-fact about it. So it was just this is a really fun movie. I mean... As you said, the humor is great. The attitude of the movie, the spirit of the movie is wonderful. And again, how can you not love a movie about a killer condom? How could you?
Indeed.
Yeah.
Also, I like the sly little, one of the reporters' names, I think the news anchor, when this news eventually does break, her name is Sharon Dish. So they need a little play of Cher and Dish.
And there was
like a TMZ style, like shitty reportage.
There was a political candidate who reminded me a lot of Mike Pence, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, a little bit. He was sort of like a cross between like a Kennedy, a Clinton, and like a Trump almost.
Yeah.
Like he was a weird like.
Yeah, but he looked like famed homophobe Mike Pence.
Yeah,
And his name was his last name was McGovern.
McGovern, which is weird because McGovern was the Democrat who ran against Nixon. So
right, but it was McGovern, so it's two.
Yeah,
separate
yeah.
Words.
Like,
yeah.
They, if they really wanted to make him like a Bible thumping like Republican, they would have picked someone who maybe was with a different name. But I thought that was weird. Like,
but
McGovern.
Every other so called, he would preach one thing.
Yeah,
and
then
be somebody else entirely. So he was.
Yeah.
He was one of the victims of the condom as well.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. So what did we learn?
For this one, I mean, a lot of it. What I learned really was this: when it comes to movies that Troma distributed, you know? They distribute a lot of movies. And I totally, like, there was a time in my life where I was scouring high and low, this is before the internet, to find any movie I can that had the Troma imprint on it, whether they made it in-house or that it was distributed. Well, because there were so many movies that they distributed, not all of them were good. Some were nigh unwatchable. But a couple of them were absolute masterpieces, the best, of course, being Combat Shock. And I think this could be the second best. So this is maybe, of all of the Troma pickups, as Lloyd would call it, the distributions, this is definitely in the top five by far. It's one of the greatest. It's just a fun movie to watch. And you can watch it as many times as you want. It never loses its luster. It moves at a brisk pace. Mm-hmm. It's funny. It keeps you guessing. Just good stuff, man. Good stuff. I'll even give you my star rating right now before you tell me what you learned.
Ooh, good.
It's a 4-star movie for me.
Yeah, agreed. I learned that, this detective, Luigi Macaroni, is Sicilian, so he has some wonderful Godfather.
Oh, did you learn that? Because he only mentioned it like 7 times in the movie, so...
Well, as a result, they have some they have some wonderful Corleone Godfather-type music, so mm-hmm. they use the variant actually, of that famous theme.
There are allusions to a few movies. You have Psycho.
Oh, yes, point. They recreate the scene.
Where, yep. Jaws, there's you got a couple bottom. I wrote down a Star Wars reference, but I guess with the Sarlacc. I don't know. Maybe. I can't remember.
Uh-huh.
And of course, yeah, The Godfather. So there was a bunch of allusions to other movies, indeed. And yeah, and the hotel was very Hotel Roslyn, very Basket Case.
For sure.
What else did you learn?
Oh my, well, I learned that my German is holding up not half bad. So, and I also get a kick out of the language, too. It's like, I was looking at this bar in Toronto where I'm going to go to watch the Mannschaft, the German national team, go play and hopefully kick ass in this year's World Cup. And Lecker sounds so dirty, but it just means like yummy, like yum. But it's like Lecker, you know, like, which I guess ties into the phrase Lech mich am Arsch, which is kiss my ass. Mm. But like the language, it sounds dirty, but it means something like yummy. And there's certain things, it was like stuff was coming back to me, like keine Sorge, like no worries. And it was just interesting. Like I picked up a lot of the language and it was fascinating because we come from, like our prejudices are that the lingua franca of cinema is English and it doesn't matter where something's filmed. Everyone, our own language, and to be able to have our lens through which it's seen. And this is very, very different. There's no way in hell this movie could be made by Americans at the time it was released and be as nonchalant about sexuality and preferences and all that as it was. So it was way ahead of its time. I don't think they could get away with that now, even. It's just very, very different. It was like a...
It's a unique...
Exploring a different planet, almost. Like Germans in New York with their set of presuppositions about Manhattan. It was very odd.
And it's interesting, too, because, you know, you hear the title... Oh, and this was also based on a graphic novel, a very famous comic book. And, I mean, the title will lead you to think of one sort of movie. I mean, when you hear Killer Condom, you're like, oh, this is going to be very puerile, it's going to be very juvenile, what have you. But then what you're watching is something that's a little bit more substantive than what you think you're going to get, you mm-hmm. know? A bit of the sly German subversion, I would say. So, just great, great stuff. And, one of these days I do want to talk about some of the Bukharite films. I definitely would love to talk about Schramm or maybe Necromantic. I mean, now we're getting to the real extreme horror, mm-hmm. but, you know, Germany has given us some interesting films. A couple of them made it into our book. This one did. The Lift, Der Lift, whatever. Killer Elevator, what have you. I really, really dig this one. And I hope that...
Oh, and the Uli Lomo film as well.
But those are all terrible.
You want to talk about stuff that made it into our book.
He's one of the worst filmmakers of all time. You know?
Oh, as is Uwe Boll. So I'm not making the case for a compelling German cinema. German language cinema, I got a real good, nice kick out of...
Well, that's different.
Of Goodnight Mommy and stuff. But
I was just thinking of some of the great...
Terrific stuff. I mean, but again, that's stuff that's set in Germany mm-hmm. and has a certain, you know, mystique and mise-en-scene. And here, again, displacement, upturning your conceptions. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. The 3 3/4 for me. Okay. It's a joy. It sagged a little toward the end, but just so much fun. So interesting. A world-weary detective just chewing on cigarette after cigarette and frequenting hotels, but he's not even interested in this. At one point he says, like, he could live without sex, and all he could do is really jerk off in the shower, and that's enough for him. So the guy, like, for his 12-inch long, he's not exactly like a Lothario. He's just going through life. He doesn't want to be in New York. He doesn't really want to be part of the scene. But it makes him so interesting.
But he also really deep down, he wants love.
He does.
He does want love. He wants that. And then that's made clear abundantly so. So, you know.
This is a movie with heart.
It's a movie called Killer Condom.
That's moving. my God, who would have thought?
Yeah, has a really, really good heart and a lot of laughs. And so, I definitely give this one a hearty recommendation.
Yes, and be sure to check out our podcast every Friday for your listening enjoyment. ReallyAwfulMovies.com, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Thank you.